ready to get and stay fit? Welcome to Fit Positive Confident with Dr. Gordon, where the focus is on your whole person health, physical, mental, and spiritual. Because your health can be affected by so many factors, Dr. G covers a range of topics in this program, from eating healthy to world-shaping events. So relax and enjoy the show.
Hello, everybody. This is Fit Positive Confident, and in the studio today, my good buddy, coming all the way from the, what is that, East Coast? That's not East Coast. That's this is the hillbilly country of Tennessee.
Yeah, hillbilly country.
But
yep. I've been buying up. Oh man, I'm telling you, I've been buying up old toilets because they make great planters.
You're kidding.
So, no, I've got all old toilets all stacked up along the road by our driveway, and pretty flowers growing out of them because that's the thing, you know.
You got any tubs too, or? Old cars?
No. Well, old cars. And yeah, I'm actually going by, I take my trailer around. I, you know, pick up junk from people's yards so that I can make room for them to have more junk. And then that way, I mean, I don't want to look too odd here. You know, I got to fit in.
You can't look like a California guy that moved to Tennessee,
no.
Right?
No, if I look like a California guy, I get shot.
Are you wearing a baseball cap?
No. Not everyone, believe it or not everyone wears baseball caps.
Baseball cap with a Cummins engine on it, logo on it.
Yeah, I love all the memes about the South. So yeah, everyone who's listening, just believe it all. Don't come here.
Believe it all. Anyways, that's the voice of my good buddy, Dr. Richard Jensen. Coming all the way from Tennessee. My goodness. California, Colorado, and then Tennessee. That's your life journey.
Washington State.
So you tried all the liberal states, so this, you finally decided to try a conservative state.
Oh, yeah. And it's so much better. I mean, you know, these.
I want to hear this.
Oh, man. Yeah, these red states have it all nailed down, man. I'm telling you.
Well, in those old toilets, man, they had more than a gallon of water that they could flush.
Exactly. And, you know, everyone's driving old pickup trucks around here with no catalytic converters and no mufflers. And
good old smell of diesel, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Brings memories of the childhood.
Oh, if I have a point where I'm not sleeping well at night, I just throw the windows open and breathe in the diesel fumes and I go right to sleep.
Oh boy. Actually, I've been to your house in Tennessee. It's a beautiful state, man.
Well, it was. It wasn't fitting in. That's why all the toilets.
Yeah. Well, you'll get there. But you got to be careful about appropriating other people's culture too.
Well, there's that too. Yeah, I know.
You can't just go over there and line up your driveway with a bunch of old toilets, you know, and pretend to be one of them because, you know, that would be wrong.
You can't do it too fast. The whole thing is you can't do it too fast. Okay, so if I just went out and got 50 old toilets and lined them up the driveway, then immediately that would be, people would just go, look, okay, he's a wannabe. But see, what I do is I put up a couple old toilets and a tub, and then a few weeks later, another toilet appears, and then like a ramshackle trailer that I have to drag down the road on its axles because it doesn't have any wheels. So then I back that in, let it rust.
Do you have like a little shower head at the end of your garden hose?
No, that's a great idea. That is a great idea.
Yeah, the summer is coming.
The next step. Yeah, that's right. You know, you got to water the flowers in those toilets. So
might as well take advantage of the situation and take a shower while you're out there. Anyways, it's always good to catch up with you, Richard.
Well, yeah, I'm at 51 toilets now, so now you're caught up.
Now I'm caught up.
And well, people, believe it all. Do not come here. Stay away.
Stay away. Tennessee sucks, right?
It is. Oh, man, it's hillbilly country. You would not like it.
Oh, where is this little town? What's the name of it? You don't.
Cleveland.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Cleveland.
Cleveland.
Yeah, Tennessee. Cleveland, Ohio.
Cleveland, Ohio. That's, go over there,
that's,
right?
That's where y'all want to go. Y'all want to go to Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah. Well, last time we talked a little bit about AI.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
And you seem to be pretty enthusiastic about that topic.
Well, I guess enthusiastic is a word you could use. I can think of other words.
Well, let me put it this way. What is it that irritates you about this whole thing? Because that's the feel that I'm getting from you, that you're irritated by AI, Elon Musk, all of these.
No. I love Elon Musk.
Okay.
He is my childhood hero. Wait, I think I'm older than him.
Yeah, you are. You are.
Elon's a really smart guy in a lot of spheres, but as with all human beings, he's not smart in all spheres. And this is a sphere that he is not smart in. So
why does this whole development and adoption of AI, it seems like it upsets you.
I wouldn't say upset. I don't like hype, and I don't like people being sucked in to believe things sweepingly that are not true. Like, I hate echo chambers, and I hate people nationally getting into one big echo chamber and falling for the hype.
When from our past conversations, your attitude towards AI reminds me of your attitude towards God.
You mean I love it?
You know, almost like you want to say all of this is overblown.
I feel like I'm being baited, and I'm not sure what you're actually trying to extract from me here.
Well, I think it's your not resentment, but your challenging of authority of somebody or something saying that this thing has the answers for everything, like God does, for example. You know, there are people, Christian people, who say God is the answer for everything, you know, and all you got to do is do follow these rules and then everything's going to be fine. And then now with AI, there are a lot of people who are saying this is the solution to all of our human problems, and, you know, and they just go on, you know, present this huge hype about how this is going to solve everything. And I think you're the type of guy that's like, okay, let me push the brakes on this a little bit.
Yeah, that's probably a fair representation. I mean, it's not like I disbelieve in God. It's not like I
right.
I don't even know what the phrase means, God is the answer to everything. I mean, not everything is a question. So I don't even know what that statement means.
God is the solution to everything, all of the problems.
God is the solution. Well, okay, God is the solution to all the problems.
But people say that. Well,
I know they do. And
Christian people say that. All you need is Jesus, you know.
Well, that's not the case. Sometimes you need a filling. Sometimes you need a root canal. Sometimes you need a bypass surgery. I mean, you know, God is the solution to the fact that you need a filling?
So now I'm comparing your attitude towards this to your attitude towards AI. Is that fair?
And that now I understand it. I think that is a legitimate comparison. I mean, AI has some value. I'm not in any way saying that AI is worthless. What I am saying is it's completely misunderstood. The nature of its limitations and the nature of its appropriate scope are wildly misunderstood. And the hype surrounding it is completely off the rails. It's like nothing I've seen in my lifetime except for cold fusion. That's the only other thing I've seen as hyped as AI is.
And that cold fusion thing all cooled off a little bit, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean...
At this point.
decades. How many promises have been made and failed? how many billions in investment have been lost. And again, I'm not saying that cold fusion isn't someday going to be a thing, but I know something about the nature of the limitations there, and I know something about the underlying science, and I also know something about the hype, and it's not a thing now, and it's going to be a long, 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 long time before it's a thing. And I would say that AI is never going to be a thing. Of course, everyone now believes it is the thing already. I think they're setting the bar so low and they've so totally drunk the Kool-Aid that they're seeing what isn't there.
Okay. So the statement is the AI will never be a thing. We're going to take a break, come back and see if we can unpack that a little bit. Welcome back. I'm in the studio with Dr. Richard Jensen, who has a PhD in ethics and logic, and he made a statement that AI will never be a thing, and we are going to explore that a little bit. So,
of course, no one can believe a word that comes out of my mouth at the moment because they know that I'm just making stuff up when I talk about 51 toilets, so
right,
no one
right,
can
right.
figure out if I'm being serious or if I'm not, but I am being serious when I say that.
No, I think people can
AI,
tell
AI
by the
AI is not a thing.
People can tell by the tone of your voice.
Okay.
We all have this intuition. We can tell when somebody's, you know, making fun and when somebody's just dead serious, like you are at this particular moment.
Yep, dead serious.
Okay, so
billions lost.
I mean, people are out there. I mean, Elon Musk is saying that AI is going to go so far as to control all of our lives and basically eventually destroy humanity. So he's giving it, ascribing to it a tremendous amount of power.
I think that depending on how you interpret those comments, they could be trivially true or trivially false. And what I mean by that is, if you want to say it's going to destroy humanity, it would not be because it gets power, like in itself intrinsically, mm-hmm. and is able to then become sentient and start replicating itself and become Skynet and, you know, anything like that. It definitely can control humanity. It already is. But it's not really it that's controlling humanity. It's humanity that's being really stupid regarding what AI is and what it can do. So in that sense, I think it already is destroying humanity. But it's also a trivially false statement in that, in my opinion, and it is based on some understanding and research about philosophy of language and philosophy of mind, it in principle is not going to become sentient. It is in principle not going to become self-replicating. And so it intrinsically is not going to have power to take over the world.
What's the most that we can expect from AI?
I think we're seeing it before our very eyes right now. I think we're seeing people just really stupidly ascribing more power to this thing than it in principle can have. And they're treating it with a level of credibility that it in principle shouldn't have. And so look at it this way. People love their echo chambers.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a state of confirmation bias. The vast majority of people are looking for what they want to see, and they're seeing what they're looking for. And that is the way people live their lives. And AI is the perfect venue for people to start chatting, if you will, and having this AI spit back to them exactly what they were expecting to hear. And they treat that as confirmation of their perspectives and of what they're trying to accomplish. And so what I think is really happening. Yeah, go ahead.
So you're basically saying that people, when they interact with AI, did they transfer their biases to it, and that's what they get back in return? In the form of questions or whatever.
Yeah, because I mean, these large language models are looking for linguistic patterns, and these large language models are responding in large part. Now, these large language models bring their own biases, which is another danger, because let's say that you enter a Google search and, you know, or a DuckDuckGo search, and you get back certain results. Well, what you do not think when you get back those results is, ah, what I'm seeing is the total reality.
Mm-hmm.
You realize that all you're seeing is a bunch of web pages.
Right.
You realize that every Tom, Dick, and Harry can put up a web page. So you're getting search results back that you know are not a reflection of some kind of objective truth. Now, you may go searching for websites that you know, fit into your echo chamber so that you can feel good about your beliefs. But you know going in that this is not a reflection of quote unquote reality. It's just a web search engine.
It's just yellow pages. Exactly. For all kinds of.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But people don't think that when they approach AI. When they approach AI, they enter in a particular question and they get results back and they think to themselves, ah, now see, this thing is in touch with all the knowledge in the world. And so I'm getting back what reality is. And so people do not bring a due level of skepticism to this little echo chamber that they're running in.
And AI can be biased, right? Because it is learning from people and sources that are biased.
Yeah, exactly. But it's much worse than that. I mean, the programmers build in their own biases. And you know, I'm not going to go off on a whole tangent about that, but just simply search for AI bias. And you're going to find countless studies that have been done showing that, in general, the developers of AI bring an extremely left-wing bias into the coding. And so you do get skewed results, particularly when you're getting anywhere near the fringes of politics. So it's not just that you're going to be seeing bias as a result of the nature of your own queries. It's that the coding itself has bias built into it.
But they're telling us that they want to ensure that these AI systems are fair.
Well, they can say that all they want. There's endless evidence to the effect that's not the case.
But when people hear that that these systems are fair, then they are going to be even more convinced that whatever answer they are getting is actually a true answer.
Right. So there's to my mind, one of the big problems, one of the big dangers is the credibility issue. People are giving these things way more credibility than they should have. So I'll give you a quick example here.
Okay.
So one of the areas in which these AIs actually are semi-worthwhile, and I put a big air quotes around semi, I think that their forte is when they're dealing in the realm of structured data. So for example, SQL queries or generating programming code. So you can ask it questions like, how would I do such and such a thing in PHP? Or how would I do such and such a thing in Ruby?
Hmm.
Or write me a SQL query based on this data set that will optimally return such and such a data set. And it will do some neat SQL things to transform one data set into another. So anytime it's dealing with these structured contexts, it actually does fairly well. And again, big air quotes around fairly. The problem is that very context reveals the limitations and the fact that you need to already know the answer before you can vet the answer that you're getting back out of the AI. So my point is, you can tell it to write code to do a certain thing, but if you don't already know how to write the code to do that certain thing, then you're not going to recognize the fact that it hands you bogus code a lot of the time.
But somebody like you will recognize it.
Correct. And that's how, my partner and I have done a lot of research on AI, and we're seeing it.
Okay, let's come back after the break and continue. right, folks, Fit Positive Confident. We are on your whatever podcast platform you're listening to. In the studio, Dr. Richard Jensen, we are talking about AI. So you are basically saying, now does that, what you just described to me, does that transfer to all kinds of other answers, not just to the code, where, you know, you can ask it a question, and you, if you're not an expert in the field, or at least if you don't have some serious knowledge, you could be presented with a bill of goods, and you're not even recognizing that it's all false or junk.
Yeah, I think that's exactly. Mm-hmm. I think that's exactly what's going on, because where AI does best is in these heavily structured contexts, and it's erroneous a lot of the time in these structured contexts. And if that's where it does best, then guaranteed it's going to do horrendously in non-structured contexts. And as a philosopher of language, I've actually tried to do philosophy with it just to have fun, just to see what it would do, what it would come up with. And it is really amazing how quickly you can back these things into a corner and just make them start spitting out ludicrous answers. And so it doesn't take but 10 seconds of knowing what you're doing with these things to realize how absolutely ridiculous they are. And yet people that don't know how to ask the right questions, you know, when you're saying basically something like, write me a term paper on such and such a subject, well, it'll go ahead and spit something out. And it's not obviously going to be bad on the face of it. But that's only because you've set the bar extremely low. And that is something that these things do well, is spit out a bunch of text. But what people need to understand is that these things don't understand anything. There's no actual wisdom. There's no knowledge. There's no understanding. This is nothing but, people may remember the early, early chatbot called Eliza.
Mm-hmm.
These things are nothing but Eliza on steroids. They're faster processing, and they have a much, much bigger data set. But they're not doing anything fundamentally different than what the Eliza program was doing. And so they're basically taking a search string, and they're parsing it, and they're correlating aspects of that search string. And they're doing sophisticated things. They're not just doing word searches. They're actually doing grammatical parsing. And then they're going out and using a very sophisticated algorithm, they're correlating aspects of that search term with, well, they call them large language models for a reason. They're basically connected to all the data they can get their little hands on. And so they're basically like big search engines on steroids, except that instead of telling you URLs in response and showing you web pages you could go to, they've actually brought those web pages into their database. So you're searching into those, into the actual data, and it's correlating that data for you. So it really is basically web search on steroids. It's Eliza on steroids. But they're not doing anything fundamentally magical or mystical.
You're saying it's like a sophisticated, intelligent secretary.
Exactly. You're basically, it's like you have staff and you're saying, go do some research for me on this subject. But the difference between your staff, human beings, and these chatbots or large language models is that your staff actually understands what they're reading, and they're able to cull out the bad from the good. And the correlations that they are drawing when they present to you a summary are based on actual understanding and experience and wisdom, whereas these bots, these AIs, have none of that. So all you're getting are syntactical connections. You're not getting any semantics. You're not getting any understanding or meaning. And consequently, you're not getting anything reliable.
So when they say that these systems are based on deep learning, what does that mean?
Okay, so these things are called generative AIs, which means that as they learn things, they draw more correlations. And as they draw more correlations and more data is fed into them, they're able to draw even more and more correlations. And so it is an exponential growth of connections. So some people may have heard of neural nets, early research done on neural nets. But the idea is that if you start out with two data points, then you can draw four correlations. But the factor grows exponentially. The more data points you have and the more lines you can draw between them, you get exponential growth in the number of correlations. And so in effect, what's happening here is it's not just that they're in touch with more and more data, it's that they're drawing more and more correlations between all that data at an exponential rate. So they are learning geometrically, but I'm using the word learning very loosely now because they don't understand anything. Again, all these connections that they're drawing are purely syntactical connections. They don't understand anything. Mm-hmm. There's no wisdom. There's no knowledge. They're not vetting anything. They're not sifting between what's good data and bad data. They're not discarding any of it. So they're drawing correlations between garbage and stuff that's good. And the net effect of it all is that as they learn more and more, they're actually degenerating, not generating. And this is becoming rigorously known. What I'm saying by rigorously is serious academic studies are being done that now realize the extent to which these things are degenerating and that their accuracy rate has plunged in a very, very short time. So, for example, I'll quote from just one article from deepgram.com that says, when a team of researchers from Stanford University and the University of California, Berkeley, tested generated codes from the March and June versions of GPT 3.5 and GPT 4, they found that only 10% of the generated responses of GPT 4 were executable. Now, what that means is, I want you to write me an algorithm to do X, Y, and Z in PHP. Okay. So in March of 2023, 53% of the responses that you'd get back from the AI were actually executable. Now, I'm not saying they were correct. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying they would at least run.
Okay.
You could actually execute them. Whereas just a few months later, that number was down to 10%. And then just 3 months later, by June, it was down to 2%.
But who makes...
So consider, consider how quickly, you're talking 53% executable down to 2% executable in a matter of about 6 months. And so it's mind-boggling to me how quickly these things are degenerating in their capacities.
But there have to be people behind this who actually make decisions that this is how these things are going to operate.
No, I think it's a much worse situation than that. Basically, you've got people that are designing the algorithms and they're tweaking the algorithms and they're manipulating the algorithms and trying to make them better and better, but they have no capacity in principle to manipulate the correlations that are being drawn directly because those are algorithmically produced. So the problem is, now they've got this insanely massive, I mean, it is indescribably massive data set, petabytes of correlations that have been drawn. You can't get in there at this point and manipulate those correlations directly. All you can do is manipulate the algorithm, which eventually indirectly may get out there and massage some of those correlations. But you can't get in there and fix what it thinks it already knows.
Okay, but if somebody like yourself was going to develop another AI system, knowing all of this stuff that you already know, what would you do to prevent all of this stuff? Now you're saying that somebody like Google or some of these other big companies, it's too late for them to go and fix it. But what if somebody starts up from fresh, brand new?
Well, so the problem here is this. What motivated all of this is a fundamental philosophical belief that is false. And this fundamental philosophical belief that is false is a belief that, for example, Elon Musk shares. And this is why he's so worried about these things becoming sentient and taking over the world. But it is a false philosophical belief. It is a misunderstanding of what the nature of consciousness is, what the nature of information itself is, what the nature of semantics is. And when you don't understand that stuff at a very deep level, so let's say you have a PhD in computer science, that doesn't mean you're an analytic philosopher. That doesn't mean that you know anything about the nature of consciousness itself.
Mm-hmm. We need to come back after the break so you can explain this thing. We're gonna build our own AI, Richard.
Oh yeah, right. I'm saying no.
All right, back in the studio with Dr. Richard Jensen. Richard, you're explaining this thing, and my question to you was: what if you were tasked or decided to create your own AI? Wouldn't you be able to avoid all of the mistakes that have been made already and therefore send it in a different direction, your platform, then?
Well, this is very akin to that whole Jurassic Park line of, we're not going to make those same mistakes again. Oh, no, you're just going to go out and make a whole bunch of brand new ones. So, yeah, I mean, I think that this whole learning experience has been very good for AI developers, and they've learned a lot of things about now what can go wrong. But man, all kinds of things are in play at this point, because literally billions of dollars have been spent developing this particular kind of approach to AI. And now that even experimentally, it's proving to be a fundamentally broken approach. And because, so we have these so you're not going to just start all over with a whole new algorithm, because the problem you're facing is you've got the whole world at this point knocking on your doorstep, and you've got billions and billions and billions of dollars tied up in, you're committed, okay? So what are you going to do? You can't start from scratch. So all you can do is manipulate the algorithms and hope that eventually you can come up with a way that the new algorithms will thread some better data back out into the data set.
But you're saying that philosophical ideas behind it are totally wrong. Or idea.
Yeah. So see, there's a fork in the road between AI research, and it basically comes down to what's called soft AI and hard AI.
Mm-hmm.
Now, soft AI is the belief that you can develop a computer system that will so spoof real consciousness that the average person that's interacting with it will not be able to tell the difference between a human that's interacting and this AI that's interacting. But the thing that makes this soft AI is that it is not making the claim that this is an actual consciousness, that it's an actual person. You're not creating an artificial person.
Right.
So the emphasis in soft AI is on artificial. What you're looking to create is a spoof. The problem with creating a spoof is that you're not actually setting the bar high enough in your algorithmic development, because if all you're trying to do is create a spoof, then you end up creating algorithms that do not actually end up working anything like the way human minds correlate things. So you have to try to come up with a model of the mind.
Mm.
And that is what hard AI research is about. Hard AI research is saying minds are nothing more than the output of really, really impressive processors and a really, really impressive data set. And so if we can figure out the nature of how correlations between information bits are occurring in the mind, then we can model that in computers. And then we will actually create a genuine mind. And I don't mean a spoof. I mean a genuine mind. So what you're trying to accomplish with hard AI drives you to do a deeper level of research and produce better algorithms than if you had set the bar lower and you're only trying to play the soft AI game. They're not trying to create an Eliza. They're trying to create a mind. So that changes everything, because now you really believe philosophically in this, what I'm going to call a reductionistic process.
Mm-hmm.
You honestly believe that minds are just brains and brains are just processors and data banks.
Bunch of electrical signals going back and forth.
Exactly. And so now you think that you can model a mind on the basis of a bunch of connections, a bunch of correlations.
So
that is why these algorithms, that's their emphasis. That's why they call them large language models. It's just a big boatload of correlations.
So they're looking at a human being as if we were some kind of a robot, and they're just trying to replicate the system that's
right.
operating that robot.
Exactly. So the fundamental, another major philosophical mistake here is the belief that what human beings are doing when we think is fundamentally a deterministic process. There is no free will. We have an illusion of free will, but we're not actually free. We're not actually creative. I mean, in the strong sense of that word, we actually are just processors. And so all we can ever do is take data in, mull it around, form various correlations, and we can make those correlations very, very, very sophisticated to the point that new things fall out, but they're not really new. They actually were determined to fall out. And so every time we think we're creating something, we're really not. We're just doing nothing more than a deterministic process to take old data, munge it around in different ways, and then ending up coming up with something that's just a recombination of all that old data.
So if this is the view that some of these sophisticated politicians have and some of these world leaders have, then there is no surprise about all of this WEF agenda, for example, that wants to reduce a human being to basically a servant or some kind of a spender or some kind of a just a piece of machinery in the system. I don't know if I'm saying that right.
No, I think you are. I mean, I think that there is a sweeping philosophy around the world, and it has emerged from science, basically. And again, let me hasten to say, I'm not bashing on science. I'm not an anti-science rube. Science has its place. It does great things. But science is not philosophy. And what can I tell you? I mean, there are things philosophers know that nobody else knows. There are things we think about and that we get right that nobody else is thinking about. So
we got 1 minute.
Okay. What are we going to do? So I'll sum it up this way. There's reductionism everywhere you look. Everywhere you look, people are reducing what is irreducibly complex. They're trying to reduce it to something that they can understand. But there are things in the universe that are ununderstandable in principle. And one of those things is the mind-body relation. Reductionists say minds are just bodies. And ultimately, brains are just computers. Really, really amazing ones. More amazing than anything we've developed so far. But doggone it, we're trying. And we'll get there.
You created too many questions. We have to do another show now.
Okay.
All right, folks. We'll be back next week. Fit, positive, confident. Bye-bye.
Be sure to tune in next time for another unique perspective on your whole person health with your host, Dr. G. And don't forget to share the goodness with friends and family and visit our website at fitpositiveconfident.tv. And follow Dr. G on Twitter at Dr. G Fitness. God bless and stay healthy.